Welcome to what we're calling What's Behind the North Texas Quakes, a public forum from KERA and State Impact Texas. I'm Rick Holter. I'm the Vice President of News at KERA. We're excited to be partnering with State Impact Texas, Azle High School, the Reno Mayor's Office, and all of our panelists here this evening, and you all. A few words about KERA first. We're the public radio and TV station for North Texas. The radio station's at 90.1 FM. TV is Channel 13. Our studios are in Dallas, but we serve the entire North Texas region. That's everywhere from Tyler to Waxahachie to Wichita Falls. And of course, Azle, Reno, and Boyd, which is why we're here tonight. So when y'all began feeling those earthquakes last November, we and our friends at State Impact Texas began months of coverage of this very important issue. I should mention, by the way, that State Impact is a statewide public radio reporting effort on energy and the environment based in Austin at KUT, which is the public radio station there. I want to just run down what tonight's format will be like. KERA reporter Dwali Sai-Kowtow will moderate the conversation with our panel of experts up here for about 45 minutes, and then we'll have another 20 minutes or so of Q&A. And the way the Q&A will work, Terrence Henry, Terrence, where are you? Right there, the guy who's waving down in the front. He's the reporter for one of the reporters from State Impact who is here. I will hand him this microphone, and he will be looking for your questions. So just flag him down. We'll give you a little heads up about 10 minutes before. And if you have a question, just raise your hand. He'll come out and he'll ask it for the panel. Have you ask? And I just want to say we really do want to like limit the length of questions so we can get to as many of them as possible. So try to pull back from making a speech and ask a question of our panel. We appreciate that. And you know, obviously there's no way we can get to every question here tonight, but we've started a discussion on Twitter already. The hashtag is TXQuakes, TXQuakes. So you can follow that tonight and in the aftermath. We'll be airing stories tomorrow, and Mose and Terrence will be working on pieces to spring out of this for the next several days. So we want to keep the conversation going on Twitter and obviously on the radio too as we get through this. So now I'd like to introduce our panel. And we'll start, you've met Dwali, I'll have a little bit more to say about her in a minute. Next to her is Representative Phil King, who's represented District 61 in the legislature since 1999. He's a member of the House Committee on Energy Resources and the Energy Resources Subcommittee on Seismic Activity. Representative King, thanks for coming.
Thanks, glad to be here.
Next to him is Linda Stokes, who is mayor of Reno, Texas. First elected in 2011, she ran unopposed and was reelected in May of 2013. Mayor Stokes, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And then we'll skip you for the moment, Bill. Next is Heather Deshawn. She's an associate professor of geophysics at SMU in Dallas. She received her PhD in earth science from UC Santa Cruz in 2004 and has been at SMU since August 2012. And then back next to Heather is Bill Stevens. He's a government relations consultant for the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, a group he helped create.
And I've only got to say, I was told to sit boy, girl, boy, girl.
Okay, excellent. Well. We're going for that pleasing look here. So, and down on the end, the last boy is Mose Bushell. He's been covering the oil and gas industry for the last 3 years with State Impact Texas. He's also a longtime reporter at KUT in Austin. And our moderator here is Dwali Sai-Kowtow. She is a reporter, senior reporter at KERA. And before she came to KERA last year, Dwali was an international correspondent for NPR, National Public Radio. She spent a bunch of years in Asia and has covered politics, culture, and in fact, earthquakes in Asia as well as in the United States. And she's been reporting for us on the situation here in the Azle-Reno-Boyd area for several months now. So Dwali, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Rick. Good evening. My name is Dwali Saikau Tao. I was based in Asia for NPR, but in fact, I actually was raised in Grand Prairie, Texas. So I've just sort of come home in the last year and came home to the surprising news that there were earthquakes happening here. And so a bit surprising for me as a journalist who's traveled, lived overseas, for the last 10 years, the earthquakes that I'm used to, well, I should say not used to, but I've reported on so many, the Indian Ocean tsunami that happened in 2004, where, you know, over 230,000 people were killed. Also in Japan, during the Fukushima earthquake and tsunami, obviously, that was a very deadly earthquake, and both of those earthquakes were a 9.0, a magnitude 9, so two or three times larger than, well, a little bit larger than what you folks have been feeling here. So it's actually quite interesting to me about what's happening here. So before I begin, I do just want to take a moment to thank each of you for coming out here, because I know that this is a very personal and important issue for all of you. It's affected your homes, your businesses, and you know, the culture here. So we'd like to offer some answers to each one of you, since I understand the last meeting here, some of you left with a lot of questions, and so we hope to answer some of those. Professor Deshaun, I'd actually like to start with you.
Okay.
I know that earthquakes have happened in Texas before, but my question is, underneath Azle and Reno, are there faults, natural faults, that have already been mapped in this region that can maybe help explain some of what's been happening?
The short answer is yes. We're used to thinking of faults occurring on our plate boundaries, such as California. This is what you usually hear in elementary school, this discussion of large plate boundary faults, such as the San Andreas or the Cascadia subduction zone or the subduction zone that caused the events in Sumatra or in Japan. The thing to remember is the Earth's crust is very old, right? It's recorded a lot of growing and shrinking and collision and extension of the continents over time. And so those old faults, these old faults still have some amount of stored energy on them, and they pepper both the central and eastern United States and are not merely confined to the plate boundaries.
So do we know that there are natural faults underneath Azle and Reno?
We do know that there is a fault system that runs through the Azle and Reno area. It's called the Newark East Fault System. It's part of this larger Mineral Wells Fault System. And again, this is an ancient, seemingly non-active faulting system that extends up into Oklahoma.
Now, when I was talking about the magnitude 9 quakes that I've reported on Japan and Thailand and Indonesia and other places, could you talk about what a magnitude is? If people are feeling a magnitude 1 quake versus a 3.6 versus a 6, what does that actually mean?
Okay, so the largest events out in Azle have been a magnitude 3.6, right? And the U.S. Geological Survey has reported down to a magnitude I think 2.2 or 2.5. One way to think about this is magnitude is a log scale, so every unit from a 1 to a 2 represents a times 10 change in the amplitude of the seismic waves, or another way to think of it is one magnitude difference is 32 times increase in energy. And I brought a food analogy, if you'll bear with me. I know this will be heard on the radio, so I'll have to describe what I'm doing in addition to letting the audience look at this. So I'm going to go through magnitude using spaghetti. So if you imagine that a magnitude 2, we're going to start with magnitude 2. We're going to imagine that the energy released in a magnitude 2 earthquake is like breaking a single strand of spaghetti and moving, displacing it like a millimeter, right? Really small amount of energy. If we simply move up one magnitude unit, it's going to take 32 times, I have to get my little bundle of 32 out here. It's going to take 32 times the amount of energy to break those spaghetti strands. So here I have 32, okay? So it takes a lot more energy. If you've ever broken spaghetti strands, you know that the more you have, the harder it is. Now if I move up to a magnitude 4, so remember I started at a magnitude 2, simply... Oh, I should break it on the microphone. All right. Well, this next one will be hard, though. Simply moving up to a magnitude 4 is essentially, and I'm not going to be able to do it because I'm not that strong and I would make a huge mess, but it would be the equivalent of trying to break, oh my gosh, I hope I'm not the one that has to clean this up, a full pound, okay? So remember, this was a magnitude 1, a single strand, or a magnitude 2, a single strand. And then just moving up to a 4 would be breaking a full pound of spaghetti. And if I went up to a magnitude 5, I would need 32,000 strands of spaghetti, which I don't have.
And a magnitude 5 is what is considered dangerous, correct? Anything under 4, as the USGS defines it, would not be as dangerous. Is that correct?
Well, there's a difference between hazard and risk. The danger posed by an earthquake has quite a bit to do with the built environment, the population density, things of that nature. You need only remember the Haiti earthquake, which was in the magnitude 7 range, but killed, 300,000 people, 300,000 people, to remember that a magnitude 7 and a magnitude 9, just by my example here with the spaghetti, that's quite a bit of difference in energy release in the earthquakes, but it's really the built environment and the population density and other factors that speak to the danger at any given magnitude.
I'd like to get to the other speakers, but I still have a couple of questions for you. Can you explain to our audience what is the difference between an induced earthquake and a natural earthquake? I mean, what is the scientific definition of that?
So right now the scientific community is using the term induced seismicity to represent earthquakes that have been caused by man-made, or that are man-made, that have been caused by humans. And a natural earthquake would be an earthquake that is the release of energy in a natural situation. Nothing's really, man hasn't had anything to do with a natural earthquake.
So you have been collecting data here in the Azle, Reno areas in terms of just since the actual earthquakes have started back in December. Can you give us a progress report of what that collection of data is and what's going on with that?
Okay. Yes, so beginning in early December, we started deploying seismic sensors in and around the Reno-Azle area, and we did that because it's incredibly important for us to capture both the magnitude threes, but also the twos, the ones, all the way down to the zeros, so that we can properly image seismicity along the fault. We need to be able to characterize the fault. So right now we run 12 seismic stations. The furthest one from here would be in Mineral Wells. The closest one to the earthquakes is actually sitting right on top of the earthquakes, and we have them kind of, the earthquakes we have kind of ringed. That data gets transferred by cell modems, or in some cases people let us use their wireless networks. It comes to SMU, we record all earthquakes. So to date, we have recorded over 300 earthquakes. There have been periods of swarm activity where we might see 1,000 little earthquakes, but I have to stress again that these very small magnitude earthquakes. They're that single spaghetti strand, right, compared to the full pound of energy. So a lot of times we'll only see the earthquakes on one or two of our 12 stations. We have now been able to image a very nice fault structure. We know where the earthquakes are occurring. We know what sense of displacement takes place along the faults, and we're now working on the question of what production and injection activities in the area, how they have affected the subsurface, and trying to understand if there is a link between oil and gas industry activities and these earthquakes. So that study is ongoing.
So if anyone has a question for Professor Deshaun, make a note of that, and then we'll get to that. We'll get to her after this. Mayor Linda Stokes, let me start with you now. You know, like the mayor of Azle, you've been in the spotlight. You've had a lot of media requests, a lot of media attention. You have been quoted today in the Environment and Energy Daily saying that new data released just yesterday by the Railroad Commission suggests a possible link between oil and gas operations and the earthquakes. You know, I can see that that word link is a tricky word.
Yes.
It's a very tricky word. And I guess I'd like to know, what do you mean? Are you saying that the disposal or the waste management by these oil and gas companies are causing earthquakes, or what were you trying to say?
In saying a link and going over the graph, there's a graph here from just the well that's out just outside of Reno, and there is an increase in both pressure and water that was pumped into these waste wells starting in August, the end of August in 2013, right up until there was a small break in December 1st of 2013, and then another spike in the first part of January in 2014. After that, it tapers off, which is in direct correlation with the amount of truck traffic that's been in the city. We have citizens that live on those roads across from those wells, and they've actually seen the amount of truck traffic coming and going. And when the truck traffic has been real heavy, we've had earthquakes, and some of them quite substantial. And when the truck traffic slowed down, everybody was saying, well, what's going on? You know, and we didn't have any earthquakes, or we didn't have any that we were feeling.
We have a story that just aired today with the mayor of Azle, Ann Brondret, and he was very clear in his feelings about what causes these earthquakes. And his feeling was that the injection wells has something to do with these earthquakes. Is that essentially, you know, your position?
Actually, Dwali, I've said that all along. Common sense tells me that if you take millions of gallons of water and you pump it down into a fault bed, you can't expect anything else. I mean, common sense tells you that it's going to shuffle and move things around. That fluid has to go somewhere.
So why do you think we haven't had earthquakes in the last 6 months since then? What do you think has happened?
Well, we're actually having them. We just heard Heather say that we've had over 300. There's only been about 34, I believe, recorded that were substantial enough to be recorded by the USGS. So we've had smaller ones. It's still going on. It's still going on because they're still pumping fluid into the ground. The reason they've gotten smaller is they've backed off on the amount of fluid, the amount of waste that they're pumping into the ground, and the amount of pressure that they're using in doing so. But it's still going on.
You've been down to Austin a couple of times. You've obviously given testimony to the Railroad Commission about this. What is it that you think that Reno residents want state legislatures to do?
I think they want them to shut those wells down. I do, and you're obviously hearing it. We didn't have earthquakes before. There was another conversation that we had back in the room waiting to come out here that they've gone back and they've looked for measurable or for any seismic activity that has gone on in the past years, and they can't find any. Now, I'm sure they're not done. Is that correct?
We're not done.
They're not done. They're still looking. But at this point, they haven't been able to find any. I know that the first disposal well or waste well was opened in 2009, so I did ask Heather if there was a possibility of going back and looking from 2009 to see if there was anything in the background when they would have spikes of high pressure or more waste. But we're still having them. I lost my train of thought. I apologize.
Now, you also are concerned about methane, and I understand that there have been water wells that have an increasingly high number of methane in it, and you wanted to maybe address that as well, correct?
Yes, because you can't address this with just earthquakes. I mean, with the earthquakes, with the disposal wells, with the gas wells comes the emissions of toxic chemicals or toxic fumes that float to people's houses. There's health clusters. There's the fact that they're using up to 17 and 18 million gallons of water to frack one well, and we're in a drought. That makes no sense at all. It makes no sense for me to tell them that they can't water their yards, they can't wash their cars, or I have to penalize them. But yet, the industry is coming and taking millions of gallons of water, and when they're done with it, it's not water. They pump it into the ground as waste. It does not return back to the ecosystem so that it comes back to us as rain. You know, I got to thinking one day, you know, we're kind of a capsule. The Earth is kind of a capsule. We have an atmosphere that keeps us in, kind of like the TV show The Dome, say to speak. But inside that dome, or inside this capsule, we have a limited amount of resources. We have a limited amount in the ground, and this is a what if, but what if there's a limited amount of moisture to this earth, and we're pumping it into the ground where it will never be used again, and it can't be used because it's not even recognizable. The methane in the wells, we have people whose wells are going dry. We have people who, one gentleman who can actually light his well water. We have a beautiful area up in Parker County, Silverado on the Brazos. They had wonderful wells. I used to go out there and run horses. We used to barrel race out there. They have a wonderful indoor pen. And their wells are useless. Their wells are useless because they're toxic.
Well, all week, KERA has been profiling, actually since last week, folks here and elsewhere in the region who've been affected by this. So if you've missed those stories, visit us at keranews.org. You'll find some of your neighbors and their stories online who are talking about what's happening to them. So Representative Phil King, you were at, well, I mean, you've certainly met with all the seismologists, all the principals concerned about this, and your constituents, obviously, plus the oil and gas companies. You were at the first meeting of the Texas House Subcommittee on Seismic Activity, and it's tasked with investigating what's causing these earthquakes. Tell us what happened at this meeting. What did they learn at this meeting?
Well, and thank you, KERA, for doing this. This has been, I just live about 10 or 15 miles south of here. So this has been a really big issue for our community. It's been an extreme concern. I think my job, as I've seen it, has been to try to make sure that the state is, and specifically the Railroad Commission, is aggressively looking into this, trying to find out what happened. Because on the one hand, and I've lived out in this area for 34 years, we've never had earthquakes. At least we never knew we had them before. I understand we always have some level of seismic activity. And then all of a sudden we started having them here late last year. On the other hand, and the first thought was, well, maybe it's what's changed. And Linda and others pointed out, hey, we got these saltwater disposal wells. And then you step back and you say, okay, there's 3,400 some odd disposal wells in Texas.
Almost 3,600.
Well, it's actually 35,000 if you can count injection wells that are used in enhanced oil recovery and things like that, and chemical disposal and all that. But as far as saltwater disposal wells, 3,600 now. And you say, okay, why do we have them all over the state, and why are they only causing seismic activity and earthquakes here in Hazel and Reno? And then there was an incident out in Shelby County, too, on the Louisiana border. Louisiana border. And so you start asking those questions. I felt like my job, representing the district, was first to try to get the Railroad Commission to take a hard look at this, and then also to make sure that the scientific community and the industry were all working together with the state, sharing data, collaborating, and trying to figure out what's going on. Because my position has always been, okay, if it's caused by man, then what do we have to do to fix that? Maybe something simple, it may be something large, I don't know. If it's not caused by us, then let's scientifically determine that as well. Let's find out exactly what the cause is. And of course, the good news is that we haven't had anything that you can feel since January the 28th, but that doesn't mean you won't have one that you can feel tonight. And, you know, I've also had people tell me that, well, a 3.2 can't cause damage. And that's probably true. However, now let me finish, because I'm on your side on this. Because people have told me they've had damage, and I believe that they have. The point being, yeah, one 3.2 may not cause damage. But if you've got a foundation, in which every foundation in our area is already stressed from the drought and just from being North Texas, and you get 15 shakes in a short period of time, yeah, that's and common sense tells you that's going to cause some damage. So when people tell me that, I believe it completely. And I've seen photos, and we've talked, and I've met with people and everything else. Now, back to the hearing. One of the things I did was I went to the Speaker of the House early on. I said, look, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what it is. We need to have a special committee just to look at this. And that committee's job has got to be to make sure that the Railroad Commission and the industry and the academic and scientific community are all talking and working together to try to figure out what's going on. And the Speaker of the House, within 2 weeks, appointed a subcommittee. We had our first hearing. Some of you were here. Linda was here at the hearing. And we had what we called invited testimony. We invited the Railroad Commission in, their new seismologist. That was another thing the Railroad Commission did that I was very pleased with. He's hired out. In fact, Dr. Pearson, I met with him yesterday to kind of find out what the very latest was from his perspective before we met tonight. And we had a hearing. We had Dr. Pearson testify. We had Linda testified. Mayor from Hazel, Arnett testified. We had we invited some industry experts in. Some Heather testified at it. Dr. Deshaun. And from my perspective, the number one thing I wanted to get out of the committee was this, or out of the hearing, that hearing, was one to make sure that everybody was being collaborative, everybody was trying to find out what was going on, and two. Two, to make sure that the Railroad Commission, you know, one question was, well, if it turns out that it is saltwater disposal wells, if that's what the science ultimately shows, then does the Railroad Commission, as the regulatory agency, have the authority to address that? And I don't know what addressing it is. Is that It may be something as simple as you have to ratchet down 10 or 20% in production, or it may be something more serious than that if it's shown to be that. I don't know. But does the Railroad Commission have the authority to do that? So one of the things that I stressed and was clarified at the commission, and they had been questioned before, do you have the regulatory authority or do we need new legislation? Do you have right now the regulatory authority to address whatever the science shows? And the Railroad Commission was very definitive in stating, yes, they currently do have the authority to fully regulate saltwater disposal wells in the event the science shows that that's what needs to happen. So that's what occurred at the first hearing.
Now, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I've certainly read scientific data that has suggested that in other areas in Texas, injection wells have been linked to earthquakes. And of course, in Oklahoma, in many other states, the data, the scientific data does suggest that there is a link. My question is, what is it going to take for state legislatures to actually do something about this?
Well, I think we are doing something right now. I think that, you know, again, this just started November, December. And since that time, we have hired a state seismologist. Nobody in Texas ever had to deal with these things before.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take a little bit of issue with you when you say other places in Texas. The only place I'm aware of that there's been a suggestion that it has to do with man-made seismic activity was the Shelby County one. And that was actually a 4-point something, so it was a substantial deal and caused some damage.
They at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport,
right,
they...
Yes. And that's the other question, that... Is there, that's the other thing, if you're not having problems other places in the state, is there something unique about the geology? Now, all I can tell you is this, the day that Heather comes up and says, I'm convinced that the saltwater disposal wells in the North Texas area are causing earthquakes, and here's why, then the next question is going to be, what do we need to do about it? And we'll go do that. The other side of it is, that it is, one thing I asked yesterday, since the Railroad Commission, and I was a little miffed that they didn't release it till yesterday, but maybe it wasn't available, I don't know. But yesterday they released the pressure readings, the disposal rates.
The volumes.
Volumes for all the wells for the surrounding area, at least for 5 out of the 7. And all the ones we're really looking at. And I asked them, I said, okay, does it show that there has been a consistent level? Because one thing I was asking, there's not very much fracking going on right now. Very little in the area. You do have produced water. You have production. Water is always produced out of oil and gas wells, particularly in this area, really for their lifetime. And so, but there's not near the level of fracking going on and production related to fracking that there was, you know, just 3 or 4 years ago when prices were up. So my question was, what have we seen over the last 4 or 5 years? Are those saltwater disposal wells being used more, less, the same? What's the deal? And what I was told was that they've been fairly consistent in recent months. There was a bump in one of the wells that took place toward the end of the year they think actually due to cold weather that it slowed down in early January, and then it's remained pretty consistent since then. So. You know, the theory is that if it's causing problems, I mean, it's pretty simple. You've got a fault, which is basically two rocks coming together, and shelves of rock, and so the question is something getting in there and lubricating that? If the fault's at 5,000 feet and you're injecting fluid at 5,000 feet and it's lubricating that, and the earthquake is at 5,000 feet, then hey, that probably, you know, is going on. On the other hand, if your earthquake is at 3 miles down and you're injecting at 5,000 feet, and understand one of the things Heather's trying to do now is to determine the depth of the quakes. Are they at the level that we're injecting water, or are they 2 miles below that? Maybe she can answer that a little bit better than I can, and that's been a big question. So I think as soon as she says this is the cause, then we say, what do you do to fix that? Again, it may be a big fix. It may be that in some areas, you can't do a saltwater disposal well. It may be a very minor fix. Hey, this particular well, because of the odd geology in that area, instead of where we had it rated at 25,000 barrels a day, it can only do 15,000 barrels a day, and they may fix the whole thing. So we just don't know.
Bill Stevens, you represent, you know, a whole lot of people who are part of this industry. I'm sure. Wondering, what is the industry reaction to all of these earthquakes that have occurred here?
Well, first of all, there's concern, and that's on several levels. And it would be, we began as an industry group, just really right after the first of the year, after your first series of quakes, we formed a task force, about 40 different folks, technical, engineering, and some policy people, obviously, to look at how we're going to handle it. And there's lots of different levels. There is the engineering level. There is the policy level. There is that technical level. But we also know that there is a human level, and that's something that is not lost in that group. And we've been meeting down through the spring. I want to be very supportive tonight of not just because that's part of my job, but I want to be very supportive tonight of Representative King. I want to be very supportive tonight of the Railroad Commission. Things don't happen just the way we always want them immediately. And I know, and I sense the frustration after the, I believe, January 2nd meeting, and there weren't answers. But as I talk to Heather, as I talk to Craig Pearson, the Railroad Commission seismologist, as I listen to Scott Tinker and the people at the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas, all experts and people that I recognize as experts and respect, it's going to be a year, I think maybe 2 years, before maybe we have those answers. I hope it's not that long. But but we're in the midst of doing that now. There are things that are going on. The Railroad Commission did hire a seismologist. Seems like a small movement. I would like for them to hire other outside entities to collect data and work with SMU and the USGS. But having said that, we're moving in that direction. We will get there. And I cannot tell you and do not have a clue of the damage factor. But I've been in three earthquakes. I also know how I felt in those three earthquakes in my life, to the magnitude of where you've been. But there is a human factor there that we as an industry recognize. But we also know that from our point of view, there's risk management from a corporate level, and that we're balancing that, obviously, with the human factor that is here. We believe that there are good guidelines inside the Railroad Commission. Number one, I believe from the beginning that they do have the jurisdiction to do what they need to do for the health and safety of citizens. I believe that they have the jurisdiction to control disposal wells. Do they have the specific jurisdiction to shut a well in because of seismic activity? No. But if there's wellbore damage, if we know that the fluids have moved outside of the injection zone that was permitted, if we know that the company is not acting under the rules of its permit, they certainly have the jurisdiction to do that. And if they need jurisdiction on seismic specifically, my guess is that that will happen as well.
But Mr. Stevens, yes. I think that there are a lot of people in this audience who are saying, who's going to pay for my damage?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm going to have to say that I think that part of that's going to have to come with some of the decisions that the scientists make and where the point of blame goes. And I'm not an arbiter of that by any stretch of the imagination. The industry incurs liabilities every day that we're there, and we are heavily regulated and not to the narrowness of seismicity, but we're heavily regulated. We are there to protect groundwater. We have regulations to protect our air, and we will talk about water again at another time, perhaps.
No, that's fine.
But, and I'd be happy to have that discussion, but that's another hour.
They actually said that.
And I said that. Do they have it narrowly on seismicity alone? Well, thank you. I'll be happy to hear from you anytime.
I'm just going to have one last question, and then I'll move over to Mo's. But we will start taking questions from the audience in a few minutes. So if you've got some questions, please, let us know, and we'll come to you with that. Now, Bill, if the data concludes that there is a link in Reno and Azle, and that the injection wells are responsible or do trigger these earthquakes, what will the industry do?
Well, number one, nobody's applying for any more permits in this area, and they're certainly also not being granted by the Railroad Commission. I think that's evident. I'd have to know what the final decision of the scientists are, and Representative King said, maybe it is an adjustment of a permit or adjustment of operations, and maybe it's a full shut-in, a shutdown. I don't know the answer to that question without knowing what the final decision would be, but it could be along any of those lines, that's for sure.
Mose Bushell, you have been reporting on the oil and gas industry for the last few years. You have been all over Texas. Tell us a little bit about, connect the dots for us in terms of what's been happening in the areas you've been reporting and Azle.
Well, I think that, what we've seen is, first of all, we've seen earthquakes in, as Representative King pointed out, in East Texas, in Shelby County. We've seen the DFW airport that a study linked to disposal. Likewise in Shelby County in Timpson, Texas. We've also seen an uptick in quakes out in West Texas around Snyder, and that there was a study that appeared to show that linked to enhanced oil recovery, perhaps, and then also an uptick in the Eagle Ford Shale region in South Texas. So to say it's localized just here in Azle or around the DFW area is not quite, the experience of people in a lot of parts of Texas. Now, whether or not that's disposal or enhanced oil or, other things, that's another debate. That's what we've seen. We've also seen slews of studies that come out making these links between disposal and quakes. And when we do open records requests with the Railroad Commission of Texas, we see that their own staff members recognize that link. They've had internal communications with citizens where they say, yeah, we know that injection can cause earthquakes. So this is not really up for debate, right? We know that this happens. So the question is whether that's what's happening here. And of course, with science, you need to be careful. And I don't know, Professor DeShawn, how long it might take, to have a 99% certainty that it is a disposal well here scientifically that is causing these quakes. I mean, that would take some time, right?
Well, we always say that our results are final after they have been published in peer-reviewed journals. The 1 or 2 years that Bill referred to did start back in December.
Right.
So we are 6 months in, and we are working on our first publications. But, of course, conclusions are not final until they've been peer-reviewed by other scientists.
So I don't want to, step on the audience's toes, but what we're going to hear from these people is we don't want to wait that long.
Exactly.
And so what people want is they want a system of policy that could, perhaps address the potential that disposal is causing earthquakes and address it quickly, to a level that might reassure people. What we've seen from the Railroad Commission is a public denial that these things can even be linked scientifically so far, which I don't think inspires much confidence among people that live here. It comes down to the policy question, right? And you asked the question already. If it is the disposal, what do you do and how do you do it quickly? And there are some states that have kind of taken more of a lead on this, I guess you could say.
Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma, they've said that they could shut down a well if they want to, Ohio, Arkansas. So, you know, there are places you can point to say, well, these are some potential policy solutions, but we haven't really seen people going that far with the discussion yet in Texas. Also, things like seismic studies before you, you know, before you site a disposal well, maybe doing a little bit more work ahead of time. So those are all, you know, I think that those are things that we're going to slowly start hearing more of. But really, this is something that we've been reporting on for years and years, and it's kind of taken a while, it seems, for the machinery of politics and our government agencies to catch up with it.
I'd like to try to open up this conversation to you out there, and please raise your hands if you have a question. We'd love to get Terrence to you, and we'll start getting some questions answered from the public. So I'm going to let Terrence handle it in the audience. It's a little bright out here for me. Hearts.
And we're really not ignoring looking at your faces with the bright
check,
light.
Check, check.
We just see this big silhouette.
One out.
Okay.
Forgive us if we don't look
all
you
right.
in the eye.
Come on.
Here we go. Okay. We've got a hand right in the back there.
Brief question. Yes, I was just wondering what you're doing on a state level to protect our water and our air, and who's to say that these faults aren't letting the water into our reservoirs?
Thank you. And by the way, I promised him I'd introduce him, so because I want to, but because y'all may want to talk to him before we leave. But Ryan Sitton, are you still in here somewhere? Ryan is the Republican nominee for Railroad Commission, and I know he'd love to stay around and visit with some of you about this if you want to grab him later. The question with groundwater, I can tell you this because I've asked this, continually asked those kind of questions, because you always want, you know, we got to be good stewards, and we need to be good stewards of our environment. I live here. I live off groundwater. Now I get well. My water comes out of a well. It doesn't come through city processing or anything either. So I'm always concerned. And if you're on a well too, you know, we periodically test them. We've always had some methane issues in the water around here long before there was gas production. In fact, my father-in-law 20 years ago had one of those water hoses you could light a match to, and he thought it was funny. But anyway, it's kind of interesting for outdoor barbecues. But So we've always had that issue. We've always had to test our wells for methane because it's a very shallow truck. I can tell you this, the Railroad Commission tells me, and I have seen no one that's disputed it, that to date there have been no instances where a saltwater disposal well leaked water into our potable water systems, into our aquifers. And it's I said our potable water system. So all I can tell you is that there have been no reports in the state of Texas out of the tens of thousands of injection wells and 3,600 saltwater disposal wells. There have been no reports of it being of any incident occurring where it leaked into the freshwater system. There have been a couple of times where they've blown out on the surface. And of course, that's a cleanup of the dirt and all the salt and the crud and all of that. So you always have to be mindful of that. Also, a few years ago, there were a lot of issues raised, primarily out of Dish, Texas, in Denton, that there might be some benzene and other carcinogenics that were being released around compressor stations and well sites and things of that. So the legislature required the industry to deploy air monitors across North Texas. Those monitors are still deployed. They are read continually. And my understanding is that where there have been instances shown, they were very localized to an equipment failure or something like that, and in each case those have been repaired and are repaired as they come up. So we have air quality monitors. We have constant well water monitoring. So that's, you know, best answer I can give you.
But Mr. Stevens, can you tell me, are oil and gas companies, when they're going into drill, are they considering the environment? Are they considering how they're actually drilling into the ground?
It may fall on deaf ears, but yes. And certainly, and I was in the business in the 1980s. You know, I had a party to drilling probably 250 wells in the state, and I'm not an expert, particularly with today's technology and with all of the procedures and operations, because I'm not in the field any longer. But it's not your granddaddy's oil and gas business. Companies are much more concerned and much more aware because of questions from from their neighbors and citizens, if for no other reason. And that's, but certainly they're much more aware. On the regulatory part on groundwater, the Railroad Commission has delegated authority of the UIC program, the Underground Injection Control Program, from the federal government, from EPA. They run that program very successfully. They are audited by EPA every year. It backs up basically what Representative King just said. The industry did provide the funds for TCEQ to put gas chromatographs throughout the Metroplex area several years ago. We think that's been successful. We also believe, as we do in this earthquake sense, that the more data, the better. We think, and we'll learn from it, and hopefully everyone else will. We just deployed in South Texas, in fact, the TCEQ has a literally virtual time website now for the chromatographs up and down the Eagleford trend because of deteriorating air conditions, particularly in San Antonio.
We've got another question here.
Yes, my name is Coley Smith from Wise County. Mr. King stated that we have a depth maybe of, say, 5,000 feet that we are pushing this in, and we don't know if the earthquake's coming from 5 miles down. Well, when you keep putting that water in, is that not a progressive push? The fact that if you keep, if this earthquake is 5 miles down and you're putting it at 5,000 feet, progressively as that feels, will that not push from 5,000 and affect even lower, and you would have no idea?
Professor Deshaun, let me turn to you for that answer.
Yes, we actually do know what depths the earthquakes are occurring at that we have recorded. So the earthquakes in this area to date extend from 2 kilometers depth down to nearly 8 kilometers depth. And I know that kilometers is not everyone's favorite unit, and I apologize, but just to put that into perspective, the injection wells in this area inject into the Ellenberger dolomite, which extends from about 2 to 3 kilometers depth. So the earthquakes extend both through the Ellenberger, the injection interval, and also down into the Precambrian basement. So they do extend, based on our current readings, down to 7 or 8 kilometers depth.
And determining that depth, that hypocenter, has been a pretty recent thing you've determined, isn't it?
That's correct. The earthquake locations are something that we do automatically. Like I said, our data comes in real time. Reanalyze that within 2 or 3 weeks.
Terrence, another question?
Oh, my name's Benita Jones, and I live about a quarter mile from one of the injection wall sites. And there are other things that they can do. If you're representing the energy people, they can recycle. They can purify. Why don't they do that instead of causing harm on everyone else? And as far as you...
I think... Well, and I can understand your sentiments. The industry in this particular, and again, and it's changed with the hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling, has used a lot more water. And it's used a lot of water, just as we said, in times and places where people are concerned about it. As far as recycling is concerned, we're on the move with that. One of the things, groups that I also represent is the Texas Desalination Association. We're working right now to, and just had hearings to try to find ways to get rid of some regulatory impediments to where it's easier to recycle and easier to desal as well. And of course, it's a dollar cost as well. But I think that Down through time, you'll see more and more and more recycling and desalination, more and more use of brackish water, more and more use of seawater, and less use of any potable water. And we have done, and in protection of groundwater, we just went through a rulemaking with the Railroad Commission on statewide Rule 13, the construction of wells, and we've redone that, and it cost considerably more to drill the well and cement it and put the casing in it now than it did. We just agreed to do that, and that's a new Railroad Commission rule. We have the hydraulic fracturing chemical chemical disclosure that went through session before last, which is Texas rule is a national, a national pattern. And so, yes, we're continually working through it. And Ms. Jones, you are exactly right. And I, on using more recycling, and I hope that I can be there with you.
Representative King, you had something else to add to that. Linda, we'll come to you after this.
Yeah, I was going to mention back when the last year, and I had the same questions you had about why can't we do more recycling? Because obviously, when you do take that water out of the ecosystem and put it down into the Edinburgh or wherever you're injecting it, it's lost forever, which is a shame. We had a hearing convened of the Energy Committee I sit on, and we brought in the recycling groups. We invited them to come in and testify, and we said, tell us what the current technology is and what are the impediments. Are there impediments in state law that are preventing you from developing a business model where people can go out and afford to do recycling because it was very expensive? And they gave us some great suggestions and some simple stuff like there's no way to change title on water, and others are worried about being sued down the line if we treat that water and that type of thing. So I actually carried the bill, and we passed a bill last session that cleared up some of those things so that the recycling industry could, basically so the government would get out of the way of the recycling industry and let them go and take off. And they have made some serious strides. They've also formed a recycling water recyclers association, so they're meeting together and sharing best practices and trying to develop that. And they're making some good progress. We've also recently, we had our first hearing last week, formed a special committee between the House and the Senate on water desalinization. And one of the things we're looking at, a lot of people are looking at coastal water. I'm more interested, we've got a sea of brackish water, of just light salt water, all under Texas. One, can we economically desalinate that for drinking water, but also can we desalinate that enough where it can be used in fracking and avoid having to use fresh water for fracking? So there's quite a bit we're trying to push people forward on.
I'm sorry to cut you off there, Representative King. Mayor Stokes.
Well, first of all, it's been bothering me the whole time, and I've had a hard time sitting still. It's not salt water. It cannot go through just a desalination program. It is pumped full of poisons. It is pumped full of things that are designed to dissolve rock, and yet we're pumping it down into rock and expecting it to stay there. It's full of radioactive tracers so that when they inject it down through there, they can tell whether or not the act of doing this has actually fractured that pipe or that casing going down there. So not only when they put it down there, when they pull it back up, it's coming back with stuff, garbage that's never meant to see the surface of the earth. It's heavy metals. It's things that we don't even really know about how detrimental they could be to us. And we're bringing them back up here, and we have a spill. And a spill is, I mean, if we spill diesel, they shut the area down and dig up all the dirt, and they have but we spill this stuff, a truck going down the road, and it's just splashing it all over the highway, and it's full of toxic chemicals.
Mr. Stevens, can you tell me the fluids that are being injected into the ground? Why is that not transparent for people to know?
It is it is transparent for the most part.
For the most part,
frack focus.
Some
it's a national register,
correct.
And you can go there.
Some of the fluids are available online, correct?
And in the legislature, and I'll say in its wisdom, the legislature provided for the protection of proprietary information in some formulas.
So you don't have to disclose.
Okay, guys,
where you can go through the Attorney General's office to receive that, but it is available. It's the best in the nation, and all of the chemicals.
No.
I think I'll just let them tell you.
We'd like to take a couple of more questions in the audience. Terrence, if you could, we've got a gentleman right here in the front.
Just give us your name and a brief question.
Good evening, sir.
Charles Randolph, Wise County, Boyd. Contrary to popular belief, I know what the difference between seismic activity and earthquakes are. And Mr. King, it's not due because I get a check from the industry. I pay for my own house. Thank you. Credibility. The Railroad Commission and you, Mr. King, are in particular under a lot of assault right now because your credibility is being questioned. WFAA just came out with a report showing that the gas wells have been tested. Commission says one thing, independent people say something else. Credibility is what government is about. When the government lose credibility, then people like us out here begin to say, enough is enough. And that's what these people are saying. Enough is enough. The question is, how can we expect you guys to take care of the problem when you can't even admit that the problem exists?
Feel that one, but I am going to address his issue with credibility.
Representative,
I will have to tell you folks that the reason that we've gotten the answers as fast out of the Railroad Commission is not just because I'm mouthy and not just because y'all are noisy. The reason that we're getting the answers as fast as we are is because I literally saw this man hold their feet to the fire at the meeting that we had in Austin. I did. I You would be very surprised, and I'm like y'all. I am not a politician, okay? I'm just like y'all. I had no idea that anything moves slower than the U.S. mail, but government does. Actually, you heard the term molasses in January? Oh, yes. It's much worse. This has actually moved through. In my experience with city government and now state government, this has moved faster than anything I've seen, and it's moving because you're talking. I'm up there talking for you, but you're talking to me, and you're talking to other people, and you're talking to people like Mose and to like people like Dwali. You're even talking to the other folks that are up here. You're talking, and you're making it happen, but you're doing it with respect also, and you're very frustrated. And I'm gonna let Mr. King answer the last part of that question if you remember it now.
Well, I think it's on credibility. All I can tell you is that, again, I think my job has been to try to push the Railroad Commission to investigate this. They are doing that. We've got SMU involved. USGS has got involved. To some extent, the EPA has got involved. We've had participation from UT, from the University of Texas, their head geologist. We've the state geologist. We've had... we've got now the Railroad Commission to hire a seismologist. We've pushed industry to share their proprietary data, and there's a great deal being shared with the scientific community and the Railroad Commission now that wasn't there before. All I can tell you is that, we're trying to move things along. The other side of that is that government can't just come up and say, you close down your convenience store, or you close down your manufacturing business, or you close down. You have to have very strong definitive reason. The thing that you were talking about, the well out in the Silverado community, and Linda Mayor Stokes mentioned that earlier, where there was an allegation that there was methane in water, and there was. The other side of that is, if you've lived in that area of Parker County all your life, you know that that's always been a problem. But it was a little bit of a unique problem out there. There was a lawsuit. They had a trial in Parker County and on that issue. And all I can tell you, because I wasn't part of the trial or anything about it, but the trial showed that the fingerprint, the isotopes of the gas that was in this gentleman's water was not the same as the neighboring Range Resource well at the time. The Railroad Commission tested it and found the same thing. Now, over the last couple of months, there's a new report out from a private group, and I have no earthly idea who they are, but I read the reports on it too, that say, oh, the fingerprints do match. So I don't know. It's still in court. I know that. I know that the EPA has withdrawn from it.
These things take time, and let me just get to a couple of more of our questions out here.
My name is Margaret Stevens, and I would like to know, since they've already proven that there is a definitive link between fracking, the hydraulic fracking, and earthquakes in Dallas, before 2008 they didn't have any. Since then they've had over 50. The problem is that why is the Institute of all that takes care of our environment not coming up with a way to have treatment plants for that disposable water so that the chemical does not come back into our water system or any place else, but it is contained.
What are lawmakers doing about this is essentially the question, isn't it? And how long, you know, how long until something can actually be on the books to protect people's properties, people's environment, people's well water? That's the question.
Well, again, and on the fracking side, I think just to change one little bit of what you said there, I don't think anybody has been suggesting that fracking itself causes earthquakes. The suggestion has been is the disposal of the wastewater from fracking. And Linda's right. It's pretty nasty stuff when it comes out of the ground. It goes in as water with some sand and has some chemicals in it that each company uses a different mix. And then it goes down and it fractures the shale, and then it pumps back up, and it's pretty nasty stuff. What had seemed like a very simple thing to do with it was to simply inject it down into the ground, into rock formations that nobody's ever going to see, smell, touch, or know about. And that had seemed to work very well for decades and decades. They've been doing saltwater disposal well for, I don't know, how many years, at least 50, and without incident, and fracking to some extent for that long. So all I can tell you is there's never been a case of contaminated freshwater. My larger concern is the fact, and Linda mentioned it, is that if you use freshwater in fracking, you dirty it up so much that you really can't you can't recycle it. You can clean it up some, and they're doing some, and doing some limited recycling with it, but you still have a lot of waste product. But at the end of the day, you still lose some of that water when it goes in saltwater disposal wells. That's why recycling and other technologies have been so important. But here's the other side of it is, as long as you have oil and gas wells, you're always going to have water coming out of the ground, even after fracking, you're going to have water coming out of the ground out of those wells forever, and you've got to find something to do with it. And up until now, the simple solution has always been the disposal wells.
I know that there are still a lot of questions out there. Unfortunately, a lot of people do need to go. Some of us will be here to answer some more questions after this. We'll take one more question from the audience, if we can. Terrence.
Hello, I'm Martina Salinas, and I'm actually the Green Party candidate for Texas Railroad Commission. And my question is about transparency and the government. How and with what right does the Railroad Commission have to ban its staff who are public servants paid by taxpayer money? How do they ban them from talking to the media?
Yeah, you know, what does that mean? I'll admit to you, I was a little bit surprised, and I'm sorry, if I'd have known you were here, I would have introduced you too. I apologize when I introduced Ryan.
I think Mark Miller is here also.
Okay. Mark's the Miller. Democrat candidate?
Libertarian candidate.
I'm sorry.
Let me just clarify that AP report is actually incorrect. The report that came out on that is incorrect. The policy for speaking to media was instituted years ago, and it was incorrectly reported recently. So, in fact, they are permitting and talking to the media, but with some direction, but it is not a media blockout. So that's actually incorrect, and the AP was was incorrect in reporting the date of that.
Yeah, I think that report attributed that policy to the current, was Milton Reister, is that his name?
Rister.
And that policy actually came into effect before he took the reins there, but it is a policy which navigates all media inquiries through the public information officer. My experience has been that they don't talk to reporters. And you can talk to commissioners occasionally, but staff members are not really available. But the timing of that report was off.
But
good side note.
From a city standpoint, yeah. Sometimes there are things that have legal basis that staff members can't talk about.
As a
citizen. That's usually why that it could involve legal action down the road. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows, when you work someplace, especially at a lawyer's office, there's things you don't talk about the clients. So it's really not any different in that aspect.
But the other side of that, they should not have a blanket policy that says staff can't talk to press. Now, staff needs to be instructed. If they get a press call, they probably need to let their supervisor or who they work know about it. And, hey, here's what they're asking about. And is this the correct information that I have? But, no, they should not have a blanket policy. And I was kind of surprised when I read that. And I'm glad you clarified it a little bit.
And let me...
Sounds like you're in charge right now, so.
Okay. I respect Mayor Stokes and everything she's done with this bar, but I have to disagree with the action that was taken on how fast Mr. King responded. Because in a state impact program in Austin in February 2013, Representative King said he kind of, sort of had some time to look at it, and that was way before
Your question is a very, very good question. And I think that what has to happen is that the studies that is currently underway, that's currently underway now, that has to actually give people fuel to actually do something about that. So unfortunately, it's not a question that we can actually answer.
The question here is probably one of how which we already kind of ran through. It's difficult to sign. It's like cigarettes, right? If I was a smoker and I got lung cancer, it might be scientifically difficult to prove 100% that what I got was because of the smoking. But there is a body of research that shows that these things are linked, right? So, and this analogy was made at this last, the last town hall meeting that was here with the Railroad Commission. So your question is, if this is an understood link, can there be some blanket policies put in? And I would urge you to talk to lawmakers like Representative King and others, as I'll be doing, to see within the upcoming legislative session if there might be proposals in that line.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt here. I want to leave the last word with someone that we started with, which is Professor Deshaun. I'd like to just, we started with you, and I'd like to conclude with you because essentially studies take a long time, and meanwhile, people here are obviously affected. The earthquakes, as Mayor Stokes is saying, even though they're small, they're still happening. And so what, in the meantime, how do we live with that? How do people here, live with the fact that these things do occur and that this study is still ongoing? How do we cope with that?
That's a very good question. First of all, I think it's very important that when you start experiencing earthquakes, that you educate yourself, and obviously this community is working hard to educate itself on oil and gas industry questions, but I also encourage you to educate yourself on earthquakes and the earth and the environment. Right now, in addition to our studies at SMU, we're working on education and outreach programs. We'll be working through the Azle Library. We are in talks with the Perot Museum to just understand some of the terminology that the scientists use, and to also educate yourself just on the scientific method. And I understand very much that it's frustrating to you all when I say that I'm not going to provide definitive conclusions until our studies have gone through peer review. But that's an incredibly important process for us to make sure that we are providing the best data possible so that others involved in public policy can really make good decisions that are good long-term decisions and not short-term decisions, to really not just solve the problem in Azle, but truly understand why some injection wells or some production wells seem to be associated with earthquakes and others aren't, because ultimately the vast majority are not, and we need to make an informed decision as we come up with new public policies that will hopefully keep this community and other communities from ever experiencing the very scary experiences that come with even going through small magnitude earthquakes in areas that had never before felt them.
Professor Deshaun, thank you so much. Mose Bushell, thank you. Mr. Stevens, Mayor Stokes, Representative King, thank you all for coming. Again, some of us will be staying behind to answer some more questions, but this concludes our forum tonight. Thank you all for coming. If you have more questions, we'll be happy to answer them as best as we can. Thank you very much.